much of the responses and answers will come from them, and I have volunteered to do the presentation. And if you allow me, I'm not going to speak to every detail of the presentation. I'll fly over, if that is fine with you. this is the outline of the presentation, which clearly explains the content of the presentation. And of course, in terms of the presentation, as you correctly pointed out, some of the work began a couple of years ago. We're giving progress, and which is linked to plans, and some of the work is fresh. And I'll speak more on that during the course of the presentation. We thought that it might be useful to just go back to what we presented to this committee before in terms of articulating the problem and which characterizes the journey that we have traveled or the trajectory that we have taken in basic education. That historically, our education system has been focusing mainly on the academic pathway to the detriment of the other pathways. The minister likes calling it an education system that still reflects appendages of the colonial era, which is essentially steeped to produce your white-collar worker as opposed to covering all aspects of an education system. And we are also seeing the high failure rate, the high dropout rate, the high repetition rate is attributable to the very same issue. And we've been pushing too many learners to go to universities. If you look at the international trend, it's only between about 20% and 30% of the population that ends up at university level. And the rest of the population is absorbed in other institutions that are preparing young people for other areas of skill that are needed by other careers in the economies of the world. And the objectives really summarize our approach. And our approach at this point in time is that with the 3-3 model, we believe that will offer differentiated offerings to learners which will respond specifically to the diverse needs of our country and as well as the young people of our country. It will also respond essentially to skills for the changing world. Strategic direction, we simply summarize the chair. The mandate that we are responding to, National Development Plan, the Medium-Term Strategic Framework, the Implementation Plan, Action Plan 2019 towards Schooling 2030, UNESCO 2030 Agenda, the African Agenda 2063, and the Continental Education Strategy. The background and context. What is essential is that this is the kind of a learner that we want eventually emerging out of the system or produced by the system. High knowledge, high skills, high competencies, to be a global player, because we're not only preparing children for South Africa, we're preparing children for the world as we move from one country to the other. I think I did indicate in one of your meetings, Chair, that when I was in Seattle where they build aeroplanes, I met with people who come from South Africa who are building aeroplanes, who said, we attended school in South Africa, we are now building engines for aeroplanes in Seattle. So we're looking at that all the skills and competencies that our children reflect must ensure that they are able to participate effectively and successfully as global players. And here is just a reminder from one scholar called Professor Andreas Leicher, who clearly indicates that knowledge is organized in this way. It's got multifaceted, and this is what we are expected to do, also in making sure that every learner goes out of our system at least would have been given the opportunity to reflect all the skills and competencies that we have here. But it is also about moving our education system from what it used to be to what is required for now and the future. And then I also indicated not so long ago that the Brookings Institute, which is one of the leading think tanks in the world, did a research involving 15 countries, South Africa was one of those, to look at, to analyze the curriculum statements of the 15 countries to check whether those curriculum statements have encapsulated the skills that are required for the changing world. And the Brookings Institute found that our curriculum indeed embraces skills that are required for the changing world, especially the CAPS curriculum. But one flip side that they pointed to was that the teaching remains a challenge, because teachers don't seem to be trained to unearth the embedded skills in the curriculum to reflect in the competencies and knowledge of learners that you are producing. So teacher training is an area that we are focusing on with HEIs, with SAFE, to make sure that we respond to the findings of the Brookings Institute. The rationale, these are the change drivers, and again, the change drivers are pointing to very important developments in the world, but also in the country, in the world, because we are a global player. And then we look at the three-stream model, and the National Development Plan enjoins us to ensure that our education system provides for different pathways and provide young people with high-quality learning opportunities. And this is what the qualification or the three-stream model is delineated. You can see those three streams there, the academic pathway, the technical vocational, and the technical occupational. Right from, you know, GET, and we are envisaging that we could subject learners to public exams at the end of grade 9, which will be quite helpful in terms of streaming learners when they get to grade 10 and further on in the FET. And these are the three streams, chair again, the academic pathway, the technical vocational stream, and technical occupational stream. And again, in terms of the academic pathway, the main issue is that we need to increase the number of learners who do math and science according to the National Development Plan, and those who even further their studies at university level in related careers of math and science. As indicated, the National Development Plan has put a target of 450,000. I can say that at the moment we are under 300,000, slightly hovering around 200, sometimes, around 200, and sometimes even below, depending on the number of learners who enroll every year. I must also emphasize the point that we maybe made earlier on, Chair, to say the good news is that learners, we're starting to see a geometric decline from math lit, and we're seeing a steady increase in mathematics, which is good news, in mathematics and physical science. And the experts are saying that given the literacy demands of Maths Lit and challenges that we have in terms of the ability to read in the system, learners are moving away from Maths Lit because it requires more of reading, and they are moving to mathematics and physical science because it's about understanding formulas and the application of formulas. Well, we're also saying we need to focus on the rationalization of schools. If you go to many of our areas, you find schools that are side by side, maybe in the same block or the same street, offering the same subject. And we are saying we need to rationalize that so that we diversify the offerings even from institutional arrangements. Improving the selection and combination of subjects is what we've started to address. We also talk about focus schools. In Gauteng, they are called schools for specialization. Technical high schools are, for instance, your focus schools. Math and science schools are your focus schools. Your arts schools are your focus schools. Agricultural schools are focus schools. And our intention is to increase them. And the one area that we need to focus on and promote is aviation schools. And we are looking at least each province having one aviation school for starters. Gauteng is starting one before the end of this year, and we are looking at encouraging other 8 provinces to do the same. The same applies to maritime studies, your maritime schools. Even the inland provinces, we want to encourage them to offer maritime programs so that more and more learners can be equipped with skills and competencies that are required. Technical vocational stream, Chair, what I can say here is that our intention is to produce more artisans. As you know that we don't have enough artisans. Preparing for the World Cup, we had to import artisans to countries like Malaysia, India and China because we didn't have enough artisans. Our TVET colleges have made very good progress, but we believe that it starts with schooling. The foundation must begin at school level, and we believe that our technical high schools, having capitalized them for quite a while now, they should be able to prepare learners to become even artisans as part of responding to the National Development Plan. We're implementing what we call CAPS 2. CAPS 2 is the curriculum and an assessment policy statement for technical subjects. And we started introducing this 3 years ago. We are now, this is the third year of implementation. We started in grade 10 in 2016, grade 11 in 2017. This year, it will be the first group of matriculants who will be writing an exam based on CAPS 2. And CAPS 2 has moved away from only congested civil, mechanical, and electrical technology. They are now broken down into those 3 each area of specialization. And learners are expected to at least pick a minimum of 1 area of specialization from each of the 3 areas. And the rest are mandatory. They have to be done by all learners. And this is also because of the demands from industry. Industry said, go back to specialization. We want employees who are grounded on these 3 areas of specialization rather than congesting all of this under one as we did before. So this year is the first year of grade 12 learners who will be writing their exams based on these areas of specialization. So we've made good progress there. What we spoke about in terms of the 3-3 model a while ago, is coming to full fruition in terms of the technical vocational stream. I think that is very important, Chair, to highlight. So it's not only about pilots and all of these things, we've now reached the full circle when it comes to technical vocational training. And we're just giving progress of what we've been doing, because there are five areas. When you introduce anything new in terms of the curriculum in basic education, there are five things that we need to do. The first one is the development of the curriculum and distributing the new learning programs to all schools. The second issue is around the training and orientation of teachers, which is very important. Number three is the institutional readiness, the workshops, where all of these activities are supposed to take place, are they up to speed? We do a full audit of that. And number four is around LTSM, the development of LTSM. Do you have the textbooks that are required for the changed curriculum? And the last one is around exams, preparing for exams. Exams is an 18-month cycle. We make sure that exemplars are developed, teachers are prepared well in advance, even in the area of exams. So that's what we have done. And therefore, this is just to indicate that the documents were printed and distributed, and this is, you know, the up-to-date capturing of how that has been carried out. In terms of training has also been done, even for grade 12, starting from grade 10, and even for what is, in addition to areas of specialization, Chair, I should have indicated that there is now something called technical mathematics and technical science. Before, learners who offer technical subjects had to do mathematics and physical science. And the mathematics and physical science was not necessarily supporting them in areas of specialization. Now, technical mathematics and technical science are relevant to support these learners, a welder, to know, you know, the calculations that are involved in welding, an electrician to know the calculations and the science that is related to that. And that is what these two subjects are intended to do. And the training has happened there as well. State of readiness, a full audit has been carried out, and schools that are offering these areas of specialization are also indicated there. LTSM has also been attended to, textbooks. During my provincial visits, we dealt with some of the issues that were raised during provincial visits, which related to, you know, receiving exemplars, receiving guidelines for PEDS and so on. We also were able to address that. In terms of exams, I've spoken about the exemplars and the issues that are related to PEDS. What is also important is that part of the reason why some of the learners and parents were not encouraging their children to do some of the subjects is because they were not part of what used to be called designated list. You used to have 29 designated lists, and the 29 designated lists were the subjects that universities focused on for learners to do bachelor's. For instance, if your subject is not part of the 29 designated list, universities would not recognize that subject, even if you get a distinction. But now, the Minister of Higher Education and Training, Professor, the former Minister of Higher Education and Training, Professor Mkhize, revoked the designated list and therefore declared that all subjects must be recognized. For instance, a subject like tourism is the fastest growing subject in the system. And we know the role that tourism plays in South Africa and the world was not even on the designated list. But now, from this year, all subjects are recognized and learners are at liberty to take those subjects even up to university level. LO has always been, it's recognized. Although it was not in the designated list, many universities recognize the importance of LO as part of preparing learners for holistic development. But now all subjects are part of the package of subjects that should be recognized. by universities which could be used to study for a bachelor. In other words, our result this year will also be based, the bachelors will be based on all subjects, not only on selected designated subjects, which means that we are going to have more bachelors this year than the previous years. And I'm raising that already so that honorable members are not surprised when the number of bachelors goes up. It's because of the revocation of the designated list. Okay, and the other issue is around procurement. We are addressing issues that are related to procurement. What is also important is that we have heightened our activities of engaging with industry. We've got a host of partnerships with industry that I indicated there. Industry has come on board. They were part of developing the curriculum. They've now come on board in terms of sponsoring and funding the activities of these subjects that are related to preparing learners for the world of work. The CETAs also, MERS CETA in particular, has adopted one school per province, and these are the schools that we have included here. Per province, which MERS CETA is funding and supporting, we have signed a memorandum of agreement with them. I've spoken to the CEO. And we have established a team at DBE which works with Mr. Tabane and the rest of the team of some of the retired principals of technical high schools who are very knowledgeable in this area. We've taken them on contract. They've been extremely helpful in linking us with industry, in getting industry to work with us. And I think this is just the beginning of many things to come. Well, NCV is offered by TVET colleges, and we are saying with the advent of the three-stream model, some of the offerings that are even offered at NCV levels can be offered at school level, which means that the TVET colleges will now need to start moving from NQF level 4 and go to NQF level 5 and operate like your old technicons. So that learners who go to TVET colleges are only learners who come from a matric. At the moment, if you finish grade 9, you'd go to a TVET college. And we are saying with the advent of the three stream, we are making a clear distinction between schooling, college, which operates at a higher qualification level, because the old TVET operation is that it offers the same qualification as schools. And you are saying there has to be a distinction that will help to ease the pressure even from universities, so that more and more learners go to TVET colleges, which will offer a qualification that is higher than schooling, which will be your higher certificate, which will be a diploma. And our proposal is that the policy provides for that already. We've met with Higher Education and Training, the Department of Higher Education and Training. They have agreed to this. And they are saying we don't need to get through a rigorous process of policy review, of changing legislation. The policy allows, at the moment, that TVET colleges can immediately move to a higher qualification and leave schooling to take care of others. And these are some of those offerings that we have indicated there. And then the technical and occupational stream. Just to indicate that this has been necessitated by skills programs which were offered in the main by schools for learners with special education needs. Learners who could not find interest, who could not make very good progress in an academically inclined curriculum. And we then introduced, we looked at offerings that could be linked to skills programs, skills and vocational programs, and we came up with the technical occupational stream. And we are again referring to the NDP that says that our education system must be inclusive in terms of our offering, although it's going to cater in the beginning, in the main, to address the dropout rate at the end of grade 9 for learners with special education needs. We are even saying learners who come from your ordinary schools will also benefit from the technical occupational stream. So it's not only focusing on learners with special education needs. We are saying if you don't find traction from your academic stream, from your technical vocational stream, we've got a third stream where you know you can offer the programs that are available there. And progress in this regard, Chair, is that we've continued with the pilot because since last year we felt that we need to even continue with the pilot this year. We started last year, but it didn't take full shape, and we said we should continue this year. And these are the schools that I indicated there. And as I said before, it would be wonderful, even in the Western Cape, there are some of the schools that are offering this set stream in all the 9 provinces. You find them there. We could even provide you the geographical location of the schools so that in your constituency work you could visit the schools and look at what is happening there. Well, for Western Cape, is that we are saying there in terms of teacher orientation, they were part of the initial training. There was no need for them to be trained this time around. They were part of the initial training. I must also indicate that even the team that developed the curricula, many of the experts were drawn from the Western Cape, simply because of some of the successes of the Western Cape on this one. Yeah. I hope it won't create you political problems. If it does, because I'm not in that space, I'm sure you'll know how to manage it. Okay. Okay, these are the 26 subjects which have been subjected to review, and the subsequent slides will show that. And we are just showing some of the subjects that will be offered in schools of skills, some that could even be offered in your ordinary public schools. And we're giving an explanation there. Now, as I said, Chair, in terms of state of readiness, we're looking at 5 things. Even in technical occupational stream, we are saying in terms of the curriculum, this is the work that has been done. In terms of teacher development, training of teachers, this is the work that has been done. In terms of institutional readiness, you'll appreciate that we started the pilot last year. We're continuing. We've done an audit. An audit has been carried out, and that's the information that you are providing there. LTSM, we're also indicating the progress that we have made. Exams, that's the work that has started in terms of exams. And I've already indicated that we are looking at public exams at the end of grade 9 and even a certificate at the end of grade 9, which will help to authenticate this 3 stream, but also prepare learners in the FET for the other streams as well. Fourth industrial revolution, I'm sure members are quite au fait with developments around fourth industrial revolution, but what is important for us is to indicate our readiness in terms of the basic education system to prepare young people to operate in the fourth industrial revolution and even beyond. Because maybe beyond our lives, there would be the fifth industrial revolution. We have to prepare young people for jobs that exist now and prepare them even for jobs that do not exist, which are going to exist in future. Because some of the jobs are going to get out of the labor market. They are going to become obsolete. So the labor market will not rely on those jobs anymore. For instance, this is what the World Economic Forum projected, indicating jobs, you know, the competencies that people were required to reflect by 2015. But if you project into 2020, these are some of the competencies and skills that people will be required to be capable and competent in. The good thing, Chair, is that, as I said, the Brookings Institute says our curriculum is a world-class curriculum. Those skills are embedded in the curriculum. The challenge is the ability of teachers to teach and assess based on those skills. And that's the issue that we are addressing with SAIS and universities, because they are training teachers for us. Well, briefly, this is just the outline that we are giving, that the fourth industrial revolution will lead to the growth in the broadband access and usage, emerging of technologies, and again, what I referred to about the World Economic Forum, which says 5.1 million jobs will not exist beyond 2015 in the labor market. Some of those jobs are even being phased out. These are the emerging technologies, which are quite disruptive, and I'm sure you see them in our daily lives, some of them we hear about, you know, the self-driving cars and so on, robotics. We have started with, the minister calls it the showcase, and I'm sure she'll say something about that in a budget speech tomorrow. We started with three provinces that are going to start to implement here. Unfortunately not Western Cape. We're starting with Gauteng, Free State, and Eastern Cape. Those are the three provinces that indicated readiness to start. As we speak now, those provinces are part of the rollout. Through the LEGO Foundation, you know, preparing learners for skills that are required in future, which would include robotics, coding, and others. So the three provinces that have started with that pilot are Gauteng, Free State, and Eastern Cape. We are looking at including others as soon as they are ready, and we are hoping that come next school calendar year 2019, the other provinces should also follow. And these are key components of the digital competencies that are required, information and data literacy. I must also highlight, Chair, the notion of digital revolution, the role that data plays in our lives now, how we manage schools, how we put together information from schools and so on. And I'll speak more about this later on. Even in our own personal lives, you know, the role of data in doing your work, etc., and etc. Conditions for this fourth industrial revolution, and of course, connectivity is very crucial. And our connectivity has really moved, not as fast as we would have loved, Chair. You'd remember that when we presented for the first time, we are around 30%. We can safely say that at least we are now at 64% of connectivity. And we're giving figures in terms of rural versus urban. We've gotten the service obligation delivery by service providers focusing on rural areas, in particular your MTN, your Vodacom and others, and I'm sure you are aware of the work that Vodacom has done, particularly around our teacher resource center. Out of 140 teacher resource centers, over 90 of them are connected, and it's been Vodacom and UNISA that played that important role. And I'm sure Honorable Boshoff will be happy to learn that some of those centers are even equipped for use by teachers and learners with special education needs. I visited one in Acadia, Dr. Simulane, and I think it's Acadia, is equipped for learners with special education needs. And we are looking at making sure that it's not only in a few selected teacher centers, but all where we provide for learners with special education needs, that service should be available. And again, we are showing connectivity, Chair. The number of teachers who have been trained, we're not moving as fast as we should. But we're also looking at what we call use your own device. For instance, the world knows that South Africa leapfrogged connectivity and in the telecommunication industry through access to cell phones, that South Africans have got more than 90% penetration of cell phones. You get cell phones almost everywhere. And therefore, teachers and learners, we're also looking at, putting out digital content that would be accessible through cell phones and getting, service providers that are involved to zero rate, the access and the utilization of such content. In terms of progress in this regard, we've started with the modernization of SASMs, which will be web-based. All the 9 provinces are participating there. We are working with CETA. I'm meeting with the CEO of CETA tomorrow morning to deal with some of the issues that are related to this to accelerate the modernization of SASMs. Northern Cape and Western Cape are coming on board because they've not been part of the utilization of SASMs. They've got their own information systems, but they've even invested in the modernization of SASMs. The agreement is that as soon as the modernized SASMs is ready, they'll be coming on board. In fact, we have agreed that they don't wait for the entire process to complete. As soon as we finish each aspect of SASMs, they must come on board because we want the entire schooling system to use the same information system. We also have what we call the data-driven district dashboard. With this system, Chair, I can monitor each and every school from Pretoria. I can even monitor them from my cell phone or from my iPad. I can tell you exactly how many learners are supposed to be in class, tell you the ages of those learners, tell you how many times a learner has repeated a grade and how a learner is performing in each subject. So that is, through the data-driven district, which we are doing through the funding of the Helen Suzman Foundation. And again, it's only 2 provinces that were not on board on the data-driven district because of the explanation that I've given. It's Northern Cape and Western Cape, and we are getting them on board as well. I've spoken to the web-based SASMs, data-driven districts, I've spoken to that a bit. Digital content development, Mr. Tlhabane and the Deputy Minister played a very important role. They galvanized the private sector. The private sector invested a lot in digitizing our content. The Deputy Minister will not escape, will not avoid talking about that tomorrow, about the amount of content that we have digitized in textbooks in our schools. In terms of broadcasting, and I'm sure, Chair, the committee knows that we've got our own TV channel, which has been doing very well in supporting learners and preparing them even for exams and so on. We also have the DBE Cloud platform. We've rolled out hardware to these provinces as indicated there. Connectivity has gone to the level that we have indicated there, working with provinces, of course. We're also modernizing our exams. And I'm sure one day when you visit our exam area, you'll think that you are in our modernized banks. When you enter in there, you'll get a number, and then you'll be provided with services that you require, just like at the bank. But what we have started with at the moment is item banking system development, which is digitized. I'll talk a little more about that later on. E-marking system, we're discussing that also with other role players. We've been working with Zimbabwe, which has introduced this in mathematics and English. We're working with countries like Kenya. We've also gone quite a long way in modernizing their exams. We've started modernizing our attending to our business intelligence system, making sure that the system that we use is up to date. Online registration system, some provinces have started that. Gauteng is leading. not only with admission and registration, but also in terms of exams and so on. But other provinces have also come on board in this respect. Online remarking is an area that we have started doing work on, and online reissue of the National Senior Certificate, it's something that we started work in. We are also modernizing our integrated examination computer system because it's a bit old, and again, it's one of the reasons that I'm meeting with the CEO of CETA to just push them, to nudge them a little bit to move faster to modernize our exam system. In terms of item development, the TAMI, the Teacher and Learner Support in Assessment, which is teacher assessment resource for monitoring improving instruction, we started utilizing that as well in the system. There are schools that are using this already. E-governance, we're also monitoring our information systems in terms of our offices and so on, migration to a cloud, data center refresh, and you know, switch environment. We are attending to all of those areas, as well as modernizing our business processes. What happens is that submissions are forwarded in files in our offices, usually your orange and yellow files. If I'm not around in my office like now, I usually get a box per day full of submissions. If I'm away for 3 days, I get three boxes full of submissions, which means that either before I go to sleep or the first thing in the morning, I have to clear those boxes. Now, with this modernized system, with digitized, I can access all submissions digitally through the system, wherever I might be, whether in Cape Town, whether I'm on the beach, on whether I'm on a holiday or on leave. I don't need to get somebody appointed to sign submissions. If the law allows for that, I can sign submissions wherever I might be, because they are digital and they're accessible. We are using a web-based system to do that. Plans for fourth industrial revolution, as I said, we've looked at the curriculum. Coding is one of those that you are looking at, robotics, nanotechnology, making sure that it forms part of our curriculum. The team has started to work on that, and as I said, we are using the three provinces, Gauteng, Free State, and Eastern Cape. Teacher training has been taking place. As part of you know, getting those three provinces to take off the ground, the rest of the other provinces will learn from them. We've looked at institutions that can be used as part of the startup for the project. We've also have spoken to the modernization of our exams. Part of what we are looking at is that assessment will not only be through a written mode, will not only be through your formal mode of exam. Projects could be used for assessment as exams. Learners be expected to produce projects that can be assessed and then be accredited based on the projects. It's called performance assessment. So we're looking at that in modernizing our exams and making sure that we are in keeping with the rest of the world. We're looking at reviewing our LTSM to make sure that it's in keeping with, you know, the new curriculum content that we are putting in the system. And then the last feature is around entrepreneurship. And I thought it would be quite not only humbling for us, but refreshing for you as oversight structures of Parliament to learn that entrepreneurship is alive and well in the system, but it's not at the scale that we want it to be. For instance, we had a group of learners coming from the Eastern Cape in an area called Kaskas, who represented South Africa as part of the global entrepreneurship competition, where you had more 5,900 schools competing And this group of learners from the Eastern Cape came out as number one in the world, where 110 countries participated in this competition. That is entrepreneurship. And we are just saying here, these are the attributes that we want to see from our learners. And entrepreneurship is also not only about knowledge, it's about passion. It's also about the relevant skills that learners need to pursue in the curriculum. There's formal entrepreneurship, but it's about providing solutions to social, to economic problems, etc., etc. And what is important is that this is part of the HRDC Council, which is led by the Deputy President of the country. The current president of the country used to lead the HRDC Council, and it's now led by the Deputy President. The task team, which has been established from the HRDC Council to look at this work in terms of education and basic education, made a presentation to CEM and the HEDCOM. And they presented proposals to the council, which were approved in terms of the date indicated there. And therefore, a sector plan has been developed covering those areas that are indicated there. And it covers these KRAs, which are part of the plan of the HRDC Council. And it covers those KRAs, KRA 1 up to KRA 4, as indicated there, Chair. And it is led by a non-profit-making organization. Dr. Fletcher is leading that in helping us to implement programs that are going to increase traction in the system in terms of entrepreneurship. In short, Chair, a sector plan was presented at the Basic Education Lakota beginning of this year, and Ms. Cavello is here to provide more information in terms of the schools that are implementing already. And these are the dates of the meetings for schools that are implementing, together with the advisory committee that is driving this work. And this is the implementation plan, and broken down, delineated in terms of the schools that are used for the pilot. Stage of readiness, again, we look at curriculum, what has been done in terms of the curriculum. The agreement is that we must avoid bringing too many new subjects, but instead use the existing subjects. For instance, life skills is one of those subjects that have already been used for, you know, growing interest around entrepreneurship. EMS in the senior phase is also used to increase and promote entrepreneurship. Institutional readiness assessment, we've put it in there. Teacher development, training of teachers, that's the plan that the team has put together. In terms of textbooks, this is the work that has been done. And quickly, Chair, in terms of what already exists in the FET, I'm starting with the technology subject, just to show how important these subjects are, although some of them were not part of the designated subject. For instance, if you look at EGD, Engineering, Graphic and Design, these are the opportunities for entrepreneurship, which are indicated there. You can become, you know, an architecture, industrial designer, etc., etc. And we looked at how provinces are using these subjects, and we took a longitudinal analysis of the participation rate. Participation rate is the number of learners per province who are offering this subject. Where it's red, it means there's a reduction. It means those provinces are not doing well. Where it's green, it means those provinces are making good progress. and therefore we should encourage them to continue in that direction, because they'll help the country to stimulate entrepreneurship in this subject. You can see in EGD, Limpopo is leading when it comes to participation. The number of learners, Limpopo is number one, as you can see, the ranking of provinces there. It's not Gauteng, it's not Western Cape, it's not Free State, it's Limpopo. Success rate means those learners who do the subject and do well, very well, then Mpumalanga is leading. Mpumalanga might not be leading in the critical mass of the numbers, but those who succeed over time, they are leading, as you can see there. Civil technology, those are the careers that are found there. I'm going to try and move faster. In terms of the number of learners who do the subject or who offer the subject, Northwest is leading. Not because I come from that province, because of the numbers of learners who are offering the subject. In terms of those who do well, KZN is leading. The success rate is KZN. Electrical technology, these are the opportunities that are available there. In terms of the participation rate over time, you can see Northwest is leading again. Success rate, Western Cape is leading. So Western Cape is leading in this one. And that is in grade 12. We are looking at grade 12. Mechanical technology, these are the opportunities that are available for the labor market for our young people. Participation rate, Northwest is leading. In terms of success rate, Gauteng is leading. And the other provinces are ranked that way. CAT, computer application technology, because that is also important. These are the opportunities that are available there. This is one of the subjects that are critical for the fourth industrial revolution chair, CAT and IT. Participation rate, Mpumalanga is leading. Success rate, Northern Cape is leading. In terms of tourism, because these subjects are also important, these are the opportunities that are available. Participation rate, Mpumalanga is leading. Success rate, Northwest is leading. Hospitality studies, these are the opportunities that are available. And then participation rate is Northwest again. You can see that Northwest is dominating here. I hope they could see this. Maybe it will help to stop them, you know, disrupting schools. Success rate, Eastern Cape is leading in terms of learners who do well in this subject. Consumer studies, these are the opportunities that are available for entrepreneurship. Participation rate, Mpumalanga is leading. Success rate, Northwest is leading. Agricultural science, these are the opportunities that are available. We need to promote agriculture because this country is predominantly rural, for sustainable livelihood, but for food security, which is very important. Participation rate, Mpumalanga is leading. Success rate is KZN. Agricultural management practice, which is quite practical, is a practical subject to supplement agricultural science. These are the opportunities that are available there. This is the participation rate. KZN is leading. Success rate is Eastern Cape. Arts subjects, I'm sure people don't even imagine that arts subjects offer huge opportunities for entrepreneurship. If you travel, you know, our country, you'll see, you know, some of the gentlemen and ladies along the road selling stuff that comes from the work that they have done. These are the subjects that we are looking at and the opportunities that are available. And participation rate, Free State is leading, and then success rate is Eastern Cape. Design, participation rate is Gauteng, success rate is Free State. And I'm sure Honorable Marchese will be very happy to see Free State quite dominating there. Dramatic Arts, its KZN participation rate, success rate is Mpumalanga. Music, Northern Cape participation rate, Honorable Basson, and success rate is KZN. Visual Arts, participation rate is Eastern Cape, and then success rate is also Eastern Cape. Chair, this is the end of the presentation. We started a very long journey, complex and difficult as it might be, but it's like a necessary operation that can take us to better life. Thank you very much. And we respond also to the injunction of the president of making this country a better place for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG. Thank you very much for that long, comprehensive presentation. But DG, listening, we can be excited, we can be, you know, we are looking forward to see these things being realized in our education system. But for me, I think you have said one very important thing that I think it forms the basis of everything that we have listened to and all the discussions that you're always having. We're preparing these learners for the future, but as long as this challenge that you have alluded to, the challenge that you have always been talking about as this committee, the challenge of teaching, that is where more than anything we need to invest. We might have very big, good ideas as we have. We have a vision where we want to go to. But if ever we haven't sorted the issue of quality teaching, I'm happy you have mentioned, just to say, you have even engaged higher education and so forth. What is it that can be done to make sure that in front of that, of those learners, they are the quality teacher who is able to teach. I think that is where really one day we need to talk about that, just to say how we're going to change the whole situation. But let me open up then, honorable members, for you to engage with better. Honorable Oliver, I'll start with you. You know, you reminded me of myself being a teacher, you know, a learner who always, even when he raises or something, you know,
yes.
The highest. And so, You make sure that you attract the attention of a teacher. So I will start with you, Honorable Alice.
It's been ages started with me.
Well, sure, for the next few meetings before we leave.
You are very good at rotating between the members. Just tomorrow is my last ever budget speech in Parliament before I go and study, so you know. It will get very quiet after I'm gone. I have three questions. She will be long putting it in. Is it a fire alarm? Okay. Three questions. The first one is, in terms of your three streams, I know you speak about the third stream being initially disabled learners, but it strikes me that the curriculum subjects for the vocational and the technical block, it's the same in a lot of respects. You've got woodworking, you've got metalworking, you've got car, mechanical. I don't know why you just don't call it two streams. I think in Germany they've got two streams and it works quite well. I can see some confusion coming between the technical vocational and the technical occupational. I don't know the difference. It's the only difference I can see is that the one has got some disabled learners. Other than that, I can't really see theoretically what the difference is. It looks like the same thing to me. I mean, I'm supportive of having technical schools, by the way. I'm not. I think it's the right thing, absolutely the right thing to do. I just think it's overly complicated to have three streams instead of two. You might as well just say academic and technical. That's a too big one. It's, you know. But anyway, it's my opinion. The other two questions are where I need more answers. I see that if you look at those technical subjects in the last section of your presentation, where you compared the provinces, apart from the art subjects, you know, apart from those art subjects like dancing and what, it looks to me that the general trend is that the big provinces, those that are growing in learner numbers, Gauteng, Western Cape, KZN, they are reducing the numbers of students doing technical subjects, computer and, you know, I don't mean what you call those subjects, but anyway, you know what I mean. Technology subjects, that's the word I'm looking for. They are having less learners, but their student numbers are growing because people are migrating to the bigger provinces, or the more urban provinces, if you like. So their student numbers are going up, but the numbers that are doing those subjects is going down. Generally, there are exceptions, but there seems to be a general trend. And whenever I see trends, I look for, is it a good trend or a bad trend? It strikes me as a bad trend, unless I miss something. And I'm wondering why there's this bad trend. It doesn't look good. And then my third question is the last one about teachers' computers. And it's just for information, because I don't know the information here. When a school teacher needs a laptop or a computer, is there... do they get an allowance in their salary package to purchase a laptop, or do they have to use a computer at school, or is a laptop or a computer given to them on a loan which they must take back to the school when they no longer work there? I'm trying to establish that, and if they are given an allowance, if you could tell me sort of how much it is. The reason I'm asking that question is it struck me suddenly that, you know, we have a problem with skills of teachers. You said it yourself in different ways. And one of the ways you can learn is if you take your computer home so that you can play, learn how this thing works, and that when you're in the classroom, you can't play on your own computer. You've got to focus on the learners. But in your time when you're not in the classroom, if you have a computer, you can teach yourself things, all sorts of things. And so I'm just wondering, you know, many of our teachers come from previously disadvantaged communities where they didn't grow up with free computers and what their father didn't give them a laptop. My father didn't give me one either, but I'm just using it as an example that what is the facility by the government? I know there was a thing about iPads years ago that President Zuma announced, but it sounded like it wasn't going to work. So I don't know what, I just want some technical detail there. Do they get money? How much money is it? If they don't get money, is there a loan machine? If there's a loan machine, how does that system work? Because I'm just concerned that teachers must be on their computers when they're not in the classroom so that they learn more skills and information and learn how to use technology, because you can't teach something if you don't know it yourself, which is, I think, one of our problems in the classroom is that we have a skill issue with teachers, not just about computers, but that's my question. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable
Bodges. Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson. Thank you very much for this presentation. You know, important is that I read the World Economic Forum report in 2016. It spoke about the future world, and it says that 65% of primary kids that are entering schools today when they graduate, they will actually go into jobs that none of us are aware about today. So this is a decisive intervention and forward thinking from the department, Chairperson. Decisive forward thinking. Because I think we have raised our concerns about why is it with the current education curriculum that there's a mass of young people that comes through the education system. They pass matric, but they remain part of the jobless young people. And I think this presentation actually speaks to where we have gone wrong, as opposed to a country, for example, like Germany, that is automotive, that is engineering driven. And I think South Africa is a developing country. We could probably take leaves out of that. It's just my concern is there's some convocations that the Director General spoke about that I think probably we need to get more pertinent presentations about, for example, the issues about aviation schools. Ordinarily, where I'm sitting, I would ordinarily not think that it's part of this whole skills equilibrium that we need to embrace. So if the Director General could take us into confidence that some of the needed schools that he speaks about, is the existing research that presupposes it's important for us to move there. I'm raising it because, for example, when he says diesel mechanics, for example, in the Northern Cape, there's a need because there's a sector-specific demand because of the mining industry. When we speak about science and technology, there's a need because of the issues of the SKA data science type of technological innovation taking place. But when he speaks about aviation, there's undertones probably that we must be taken into confidence about. And then importantly, Chairperson, if we could be taken into confidence about what is the relationships in terms of developing this new outlook with sector-specific departments. For example, science and technology, for me, is a key issue. Because when we speak about fourth industrial revolution, you speak about science and technology. What is the relationship as it relates to science and technology? And just maybe one word of advice, the issues of Mercita is an important issue, but when we speak about fourth industrial revolution, we need to maybe expand our partnership with other partner CETAs. It can't be just manufacturing. Look, I mean, Honorable Chairperson, this issue is about education and training development CETA. It's a massive innovation that actually requires our participation. And then lastly, look, when we speak about basic education, we speak about what is your minimum rules of engagement here. Fact of the matter is, and I think one of the honorable members have raised it, there's a transmission of knowledge from one person to another. The issues of education, the educator, vice versa, your learner. And I think we must actually encourage the Director General to make sure that we assist with that, because what we want is we want a capable state. And a capable state presupposes that you have capacity within our existing human resources to translate this new knowledge to our learners. But I actually want to complement this type of a presentation. I think it takes us forward, probably 3 to 5 years into the future, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Honorable Chairperson.
course.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you, DG, for the presentation. You know, Chairperson, I want to also say that this initiative must be applauded because it is a great initiative. When listening to the presentation, I tend to be excited by the post-industrial revolution that is preparing our learners for present and the future. However, while doing that, we all agree that it comes with challenges. The DG has mentioned the issue of competency of teachers. What one is raising is looking at the readiness of readiness and competency of the teachers, as well as the communities that are affected by this program. And also, Chair, looking at the limited resources that we are having as a country as to how is the department prioritizing the beneficiaries of this project that being implemented. The other issue is that the current situation demands of the teachers to be upgraded. And remember with the CPTD, it's a continuous process or program that is expected of teachers to be upgraded. Already there is an outcry that teachers are in certain instances always out of the class being upgraded in a way, but we don't have a way. Maybe the department is having a way to ensure that while doing that we also need to prioritize much time for teaching and learning in class for the learners to also benefit while we are busy trying to improve our teacher. Then with regard the three-stream model, I wanted to know, Chair, as to what the department is expecting to roll to all the schools, looking also to the competency and the readiness, as well as the shortage of financial resources that our country is facing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Babu Kosha.
Mama Kosha. Siabo, Mama Chair. Everybody has now spoken about the learner and the teacher readiness. What I would like to know is, how is basic education going to compete with the broader market out there to entice these people to come to education to be able to teach? Because it's a skill that is acquired. It's not just a skill that's been given to you. Mechanics, electrical engineers, and those type of people, they are skilled, and the salaries that teachers are paid do not compete with the broader market out there. And then I'd like to know consultations with the unions and the DHET, whether that's been done and discussed, and what was the outcome thereof. And we speak of special needs education. Thank you very much for the occupational stream that is now coming in. But I just have one little problem, or it's not a little problem, it's a problem. We could be stigmatizing, because many learners come from a social background, poverty-ridden background. And it's not necessarily that they are in the special needs field, but because of their background, they have not been able to master the academic stream. How are we going to ensure that these learners are not placed in the occupational stream? And then LTSM, DG, on paper it looks great. But when we do our oversight, LTSM is not available, especially in the rural schools. And if we have a look at our connected rural versus urban schools in slide 60, it speaks of dire problems. 3% Free State, 6% Gauteng, 11% Mpumalanga, 3% Northwest that are connected. It's something that needs great attention. And then what I cannot understand is the participation rate that you speak of and the success rate. Why would you say that one school has the great participation but another school has a better success rate? Something is amiss there and we need to find out why. Workshops. About 60% of our schools will have to be fitted with workshops with this new industrial revolution and the three-stream three-stream model. How far are we with regard to that? And then for the two streams, not the academic, the other two, what certificates will be provided to these learners? And by 2030, at least 60% of occupations will be automated. Are we really in basic education ready to be able to tackle the fact that many people that are skilled in a different line will most probably sit without work? How are we going to ensure that this new model for our children going forward to 2030 will also not be part and parcel of the 60% job losses that could emanate from our new stream? And then I just want to leave us with something. Stephen Hawking once stated there's a real danger, and we must listen to this, that computers will develop intelligence and take over. We urgently need to develop direct connections to the brain so that computers can add to human intelligence rather than be in opposition. And that's something that we, as part and parcel of basic education, must really sit down and workshop. We want computers, but they must not be our opposition.
Thank you very much. Mamu Bosho. Mamu Bosho. Mamu Machesa. So interested, you said Machesa.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Diji, for the presentation. Actually, this, I think, is a good innovation and the direction that we are taking. Really, it gives us hope that at least we're getting some way. But what I wanted to maybe suggest, or I don't know if it's possible that we can look at, instead of having a situation whereby we expect qualified people to come to the school, that we partner directly with the industry in terms of allowing the learners to be hands-on, exposed to the actual industry. And that can only be achieved with in partnership with the CETA. One of our members mentioned Germany. I remember I might have mentioned it a long time ago that, you know, I have a friend from Germany who left school at about standard 8, you would say. But she was able to go, the type of program that she entered into from standard 6, she would go to the industry. She started working as an administrator, filing papers, and she went through the whole process. It was a manufacturing company. She went through the whole process of how they go, you know, from different divisions within the factory. And at standard 8, when she finished, she basically qualified to work in the industry. She could be hired. You know, she managed to find a job in Ireland, but that gave her enough skills to be able to actually be able to fend for herself and to get this acquired skill. I'm not saying that we have to go to that extent, but you know, really having the CETA, maybe Chairperson, we can invite the CETA and really find out how can they really take part into this program to make sure that our learners even if it's not during school hours, but you know, during holidays, that they partner with the industry that they're of interest to them, and so that they can actually be able to acquire skills. So I don't know if it's something that we can look at as a committee to make sure that like we take this a little bit further, and our learners do not only work with a piece of paper, but they really get indoor within the floor of the industry the experience that they need and the skills. And also I wanted to find out that I think this could be just a little bit out from the whole presentation. We've seen there's a budget cut of about 57 million specifically on math, science and technology. And you know, you say that those are our priority, but yet I think you might have explained to us, but I just don't remember. But I just would like you, maybe if you can just respond to that issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Chefete. It is so to be the last speaker. People have said, no, it's not nice, because you will be like someone who is repeating what has been said. But I would like to raise some few points to echo the others who have just appreciated the presentation, DJ. Really, this is exciting. And one who'd like to see it being realized fully. Because really it is an inclusive purpose accommodating all our learners that are neglected outside there. My problem, I will raise it, and I always raise it, is when you choose your piloting provinces. I have a problem with that. Gauteng will be number one. It's good today, Western Cape, that this is not piloting. Gauteng will be number one. Free State, what? Now, my question is, in your plans, when do you, what are your plans to reach all the provinces? When are you going to reach all the provinces? Because in your presentation, I noticed that you said the others will follow and they will learn from those that have been trained. Is that your intention, that the three pilot provinces will mentor the others? I'm sure Chairperson spoke about good quality education, meaning that we need quality educators. In your presentation, I noticed that you have trained already from March, from April 2017 up to March 2018, a set of subject advisors and educators. Is that training now and making those teachers now experts in their field that they can roll out? I'm asking this because you mentioned the two schools, Mamogo and Baitiredi in Northern Cape, of which there is a school that they say N.J. Haynes. N.J. Haynes is also giving the skills. I once had a learner who was from that school who wanted to take some practicals at the certain this the Penalpitas. And these Penalpitas is that school accredited to give this subject. Is that child, how am I going to be sure that child is well trained or has received the accreditation? So my question is, after completing these courses or these studies, is that a child or the learner going to receive an accredited certificate? Is Malusi involved in accreditation of this, or how are they being to be accredited? I was also worried about these aviation schools, as you said, you are aiming that each and every province should have an aviation school. Then my question was, what you are? Then who's blame? Who will drive? Who's blame at the end? I thought that so unanswered by saying, at least do we have helicopters, we have in Northern Cape, we have agriculture, where we are going. So, thank you, Chairperson. Most of the question, the one now on remarking, I noticed that you spoke about online remarking. It's just a point of interest, because one, we are in your constituencies, you get these questions. How long does it take for the learner to receive his or her results after she has applied for remarking? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Honourable Members, when you go to the airport these days, it's so full, as if we are at the bus, at the bus rank. So
it's 299.
So we shouldn't question this aviation because of that needs to be there. It's
something that
it shows that we are going there now. It's becoming a mode of transport the way it is. But DJ, for me,
299.
I've got to make just two. I'm very excited again when the department were bringing back the issue of grade 9 exit exam. I know it's something that has been long talked about, as to say, how do we, what's that? If ever, those are the discussions. I think it's one discussion that we need to go back to and say, when and how are we looking at realizing that? But again, I think it should be very important then, DG, as we are saying, this year, 2018 will be, it's the first class 2 exam. I'm imagining those learners will be getting that certificate, matric certificate. He or he, she wants to go to the TVET college. For me, I'm asking on the talks that we have with higher education. Yes, you said they are prepared. They can up their MQL level, but the worry is, when are we realizing that? We're just a few months from that. These learners will be qualifying, be out of the schooling system, they would want to go there. So what is it that you are doing with? But also with this grade 9, is to say, what time frames are we looking at? Are you anyway towards the end of finalizing those discussions? Because it's one thing that that will help us a lot. Same thing, I'm excited, as they're saying, CAPS 2, getting into, for the first time in 2018. Again, it says to us, committee members, we need even to engage with my ministry here. And also starting from your department, the readiness, because for me it says, those question papers we've got, you know, we have set all those things. It even widened the scope now, moving forward. Recently we've heard that we've added even the sign language. It's a good move, but when it comes to the readiness of the system, UTG, if you can assure us that come the start of the exams, those are the things that the system is ready for. We won't see any clinches and hinges when it comes to our learners having to sit for those examinations. One thing, again, that is very exciting is this issue of the designated list of subjects. Sometimes, I don't know, I don't remember, how do we make sure that the communities know about these things? They're of advantage to our communities. We need to find a way, yes, as public rights, but even with you, the department, these are the things that need to be communicated. That these things need to be known, because really, as I'm telling you, if you can go out there, even amongst the teachers themselves, to ask them about the subjects that are designated, what is it? I can assure you, many of them will be very puzzled as to say, what is it that you're talking about? It's part of the communication that we always lead from the side of the department is to say, talk about these issues. Our communities must know, where's your army, the educators? These are the things that they must know so that they can even talk to the learners and to assist them as they move forward with their education. But DG, I can assure you, there are so many areas and issues that have been raised by honorable members. Can I afford you and your team the opportunity to respond?
Honorable Chair, honorable members, thank you very much. I didn't know that it will induce so much interest from honorable members. Had I known, I would have brought the entire department to come and respond to all these things that honorable members have raised. Nonetheless, this team will have to respond. At the moment, there are no specific questions to entrepreneurship, Mrs. Cavello. Maybe Dr. Zimilani and Ms. Cavani could come in from the first set of questions and then take it from there. I'm awfully aware of making sure that we promote gender, not only being part of the team, but being active as part of the team. But in this case, please understand, Chair, it doesn't mean that we marginalize Mrs. Cavello. It's just that she specializes on entrepreneurship, at least for now. Can I request Dr. Zimilani and then Mrs. Cavani, then I'll come in.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning to all honorable members, and thank you for the question, which are a bit difficult to address, but one is going to give an attempt at them. Maybe starting with Honorable Ollis, I think the question about whether we should go the three-stream model or the two-stream model, I think one is also drawing from international experience as well. Before one gives examples, one should also maybe also indicate the fact that I think as a country we look at our context and the in terms of our context, which will differ from other countries' context, we have to therefore come with innovative ways and ideas of making sure that what we provide in terms of curriculum offerings is going to meet our diverse needs of our learners. Now, from international experience, I can mention an example of Malaysia. In Malaysia, you get three pathways from grade 10 to grade 12. It's the academic, it's the vocational, it's the technical. That's how they are separating the three streams in Malaysia. Now, if you take an African country, for instance, a country like Ghana, you'll find that they have got five programs or five pathways at upper secondary school. I'm not going to get into details about the five, but they are five. And if you go to Finland, Finland has got a two-stream model. So there are these variations, and I think it comes down to what are the country's needs and what are the contexts within which we have to deliver the programs. Our reality, for instance, in South Africa is that there will be learners who may not proceed even after grade 9 to articulate to the FET levels, who might, because of their interests, aptitudes, ability, might opt to actually articulate to the world of work, which is actually the situation with most learners in our schools of skill, as an example. After completing an equivalent of grade 9, they actually go out and look for work because of those three attributes that I've mentioned. So therefore, looking at that as a practical reality that we have to deal with, that is why then we are talking about the three stream, in which case one of the differentials is your theory versus practical in terms of the three different streams, with the academic being mainly theoretical and learners articulating to higher education institutions like universities. But with how we've conceptualized the technical vocational pathway, we are looking at a 50-50 split between theory and practice or practicals, so that learners who have pursued that line of that program will then in the main articulate to apprenticeship programs and even further into higher education institutions. Whereas with the technical occupational one, we are looking at more practicals than theory, so we are looking at 25% theory and 75% practical. So therefore we try to accommodate this wide spectrum of abilities, aptitude, and interest, so that you can also allow them. That is why we even introduce it at FET level, to make sure that we allow learners not to reach a dead end after grade 9, but they can articulate to further education and training levels, even up to varsity, because people are different. They've got different abilities. So the question of diversity and how we can cater for the diversity in terms of interest, aptitude, and ability has actually informed this the three-stream model, so that we are able to cater almost for all the differences that we have in our learner population. I think that's basically one. It's one of the rationales that we have looked into. About provinces where there is growth in the number of learner population, but a decline in terms of the uptake in technology subjects, I must say that it's a pattern that one hasn't quite observed. Maybe it's a pattern that one may have to investigate further, to try and look at what could be at play in this case. Why are we seeing the drop in terms of uptake in technology subjects, so that we are able to inform the portfolio committee accordingly. Otherwise, one would make some second guess, which may not be correct. With Honorable Gwotes, asked two questions. The first one was about the relationship with sector-specific, whether it's departments, yes. Maybe let me start by indicating that DBE, the minister has recently established a ministerial task team that will oversee this whole development of introducing and strengthening the three-stream model, as it were. Now, in constituting the ministerial task team, we have got different and critical sectors for or partners of basic education that are participating in that. For instance, we have got representatives from UMALUSI, representatives from the QCTO, Department of Higher Education and Training is part of that, and the list actually goes on, but we also have we are in partnership with, for instance, the Department of Science and Technology. We've been, especially when it comes to the MST offerings or subjects, we are working very closely with the Department of Science and Technology. So the examples actually can be elaborated on, but this is just to give the idea that this is one consideration that we've always had in mind to make sure that our curriculum offerings and our developments and innovations are also informed by what is happening elsewhere in other departments. And in the presentation, it may have also come through that with the idea of increasing the number of focus schools, DPE is actually looking at doing alignment with economic zones, as it were. For instance, in the main, you know, coastal provinces might introduce maybe more maritime schools than elsewhere. In your inland provinces like the Free State, you might introduce more agricultural schools in Mpumalanga, etc. So that's the kind of thinking which is also informed by and directed by the National Development Plan to make that kind of alignment with economic zones. So there are those. So therefore, obviously, the Department of Land Affairs and Agriculture. I'm exposing myself here. Rural development, and yes. So obviously those departments will have to work very closely with. For instance, there was an agriculture imbizo at the department, you know. So we have representations from different departments. So we are working with different departments in these innovations. The rules of engagement, I'm not sure if I did get the Honourable Member's question in that regard, whether it's rules of engagement with participants. Both. Thank you, DJ, through you, Chair. On teacher development, I think there was also another question that looks at the expertise that happens, that exists in industry, and especially how are we planning to tap into that expertise and entice the expertise from industry. I think the approach will have to be, these are the discussions that we are having. I mean, these partners that we have already started engaging, for instance, as an example, when DBE was doing the training of teachers and subject advisors for CAPS 2 for technical high schools, DBE had, because these partnerships were already in existence, DBE actually used the training centers of those industries and business, because the facilities are there, so that even our teachers get that hands-on experience and hands-on knowledge in terms of how to deliver the curriculum instead of, you know, doing it theoretically. But we also are contemplating to take it one step further and look at how we could get into some form of partnership that would begin by looking at how do we structure the apprenticeship program. I mean, learning from other countries as well, because in countries like the UK, France, which is countries that where we have done some observation and have drawn some lessons, the apprenticeship program is actually developed in partnership with the industry. They develop the curriculum, because included in the apprenticeship program should be issues of job knowledge, the correct attributes and attitudes, even issues of time management, self-management, and all of those, which Honorable Boshoff did touch on slightly to say when she was talking about, you know, an overemphasis on introducing computers so that eventually we may have a generation that is not well-developed and well-rounded, ultimately. But through an apprenticeship program, and working with industry, you find that there are job skills that are required, so that a person is not only getting the theory part of it, but also gets what is expected. Even things like the dress code for a specific job, those are also included in that regard. So to address this issue of technicians and artisans working in industry, if we can strengthen the partnership to such an extent that then industry might allow those technicians and artisans to actually offer their time and come to our schools and offer these apprenticeship programs themselves, that could also strengthen our move towards trying to professionalize the artisans who are already working in our schools, but they are not qualified teachers, and industry actually is taking them. That is going to take a long time, but what we could explore at the moment is the industries that we have got partnerships with. We also look at, you know, exchanging that kind of expertise and get those experts to come and deliver such programs at the school level. And of course, also giving our learners an opportunity to gain the workplace learning experience. So these are some of the discussions that we are having as part of the partnerships that we are entering into with business and industry. Honorable Boshoff, I think in terms of resourcing the workshops, the progress, we, as DG indicated when he was making the presentation, that we do almost on an annual basis, we do what we call the audit. So the audit in these schools also looks into the workshops, facilities that are required to deliver the curriculum, etc. And through the MST grant, then we provide provinces the financial resource to actually do the procurement and resource those workshops. But obviously, going forward, we need to begin to plan now Which is why sometime last year, DBE actually put together a bid to National Treasury to introduce the three-stream model, so that we are looking forward. As much as we currently do have the MST grant, but it's not going to be enough, and it's not going to take us far enough in terms of who we want to get to introduce the three pathways. So we are engaging National Treasury in this regard. But also, the partnership with industry does also include the utilization of the resources in some of those industries. For instance, the training centers. You know, already we are using the training centers. So that actually takes off a bit of the burden from the resource constraint environment that we are bringing about. About the stigmatization, it's a difficult question, but I actually found comfort sometime last year to realize that the issue of the technical, vocational, technical, occupational pathways, the stigma around those is actually a world phenomenon. It's not only a South African phenomenon. But in order to address that, one, it will require a lot of advocacy and engaging the parent community. Two, it's going to be also dependent on the outcomes, the learners that graduate from these programs, when they get jobs, when they start their own businesses, I think that is likely to change even the attitude that we have towards such programs. So I think the taste will be in the pudding. So the question of, instead of getting more and more young people roaming the streets and joining the NEET group, we might see more and more young people having the skills that are required by industry and therefore getting jobs, and some of them even starting their own businesses as small entrepreneurs. So it might change the perception. And at the same time, maybe one last issue about this is to look at the qualification that is going to be introduced with this at NQF level 1, that is at the end of grade 9. It's going to be a GCE for all learners who complete grade 9. Okay. The General Certificate of Education. Thanks, DJ. So it's going to be a General Certificate of Education for all learners. And that was an advice from Uma Lucy. Maybe that also addresses the question of whether or not we've been involved in Uma Lucy in this development. Yes, we've been right from the start. We've been engaging Uma Lucy, QCTO, the Quality Council for Trades and Occupations, Higher Education, SAQUA. We've involved all those critical players in the education system. Maybe the final consideration is that we've been looking, together with Department of Higher Education and Training, the two deputy ministers of the two departments actually established a task team about 2 years ago, which task team was going to look at the curriculum at TVET colleges, and this curriculum that we are developing, for instance, the technical occupational pathway, and looking at issues of articulation so that our learners can articulate immediately after grade 9, can go directly to TVET colleges. Because at the moment, reality is that our learners do not articulate to TVET colleges directly after grade 9. A majority of them have got to go all the way up to grade 12, not pass and qualify for university studies, and then go back to Tibet colleges to start from an equivalence of NQF level 2. So therefore, we are looking at issues of articulation. We are also looking at issues of portability, to say learners can move across the programs, these three streams. A learner should be able to move from a technical occupational to a technical vocational, or vice versa. Because in other countries you find a situation where even learners who've been pursuing an academic pathway do, after completing, say, matric, or even after completing a degree qualification, come back and do an apprenticeship program. So that flexibility and portability in terms of courses that you have done to move from one program to the other can lead to issues of parity of esteem in terms of qualifications, and it's therefore likely to take away the issue of stigma. I think DG and Honorable Chair, maybe let me stop there. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Members and the DG colleagues. I'll answer the first part of this question that was asked by Honorable Ollis, and the DG will handle the latter part. We are in agreement with you, Honorable Ollis, that the time that teachers spend with their machines or the devices would give them that advantage of acclimatizing themselves with the device and how to use it, so that when they get into the classroom, they don't deal with the issues of how does this thing work, but they can actually get straight into the delivery of the lesson. So we are in agreement with you. And the question was, are teachers allowed to take these machines home? I'm going to speak to two case studies. One of the Eastern Cape, where all foundation phase teachers were given laptops and other devices that assist them to deliver their lessons and administer their classrooms and do all that a teacher needs to do with a machine. And these are handed over to teachers and they take them with them. But the other part of how do they acquire them, the financial aspect of it, I'll leave it to the DG. The second case study, and it's something that members, I assume, know very well, is the case of Gauteng, where learners and teachers are given devices. And they're actually allowed to take them home. Learners have these devices for the whole year. And at the end of the year, then they have to return them. Yes, there are challenges. Either way, the challenge is that the return rate is very low. In that, Gauteng reported that out of all the devices that were issued, they could recover about 40%. Children would return them. So we're faced with the situation where, yes, we agree with what you are saying. If learners have these things with them, they'll be able to play around with them, they know how to use them, and they don't just use them within the confines of the classroom, but they can even use them outside of the confines. However, the nation is still facing those challenges that is also related to the LTSM with regard to the retrieval rate of these machines. But we also know that schools that have taken the decision of not giving them to learners and lock them up in store rooms and all that. We have had reports of break-ins as well. So it's a door which swings both ways. Whether you give it to them or you lock them, you're facing a challenge. But the principle that you are speaking to, we fully agree with, that the amount of time that they have exposed to the machines is going to give them an opportunity to know the modalities, how to use them, and take advantage of them being there. I'll leave the other part of the question to the DG to respond to. The question raised by Honorable Borges, Dr. Similani partly responded to that. What is the relationship as it relates to sector-specific partnerships? The DG makes it his business to ensure that we work with six sister departments on issues that involve and need them. For instance, we're working with the Department of Agriculture and Fisheries on issues of maritime studies. When you develop the curriculum there, we work closely with them because that is our space and they would understand it well. And we want their inputs when the curriculum is gathered. These are some of the people that we are interested in hearing what they say, but they play a critical role in assisting us to finalize the curriculum. We're working with them on developing what you call an agricultural focus school, a self-sustaining agricultural school. We are piloting that. We are testing a model, a 21st century agricultural school. As you indicated, we're in the 21st century, and as we design these schools, we have this in mind. The type of skills and jobs that are going to be required in the agricultural space are going to be influenced by the technologies that already are there. For instance, if a farmer today wants to measure their farm, they no longer do it in a physical way, but you've got technologies like drones that you can actually send over and measure the dimensions of your farm using the technology itself. The 21st century and the fourth industrial revolution is going to affect how the curriculum is packaged and how the farming industry is going to look like in the future. And as we prepare these learners to enter that type of future, where it is going to affect the number of people that are going to be hired by this future farmer who is still in our classroom to deal with issues of removing the wheat on the crop. Because technology already gives us seeds that are wheat resistant. So automatically they need to understand all these exciting developments, and yes, it is going to affect the number of people that this future farmer will have to employ, because you will not need more hands than you do or you did in the past to actually deal with the issue of the weeds, because technology will take care of that. How learners are going to identify the market? Today it's easy because they'll be able to get into the apps and be able to know where actually my produce is required more and be able to link with the market and all that. So these are the type of learners that we are teaching now, and that our curriculum in the fourth industrial revolution need to respond to this type of things and prepare them for this type of future. And we're working with the relevant departments. We work with the Department of Higher Education on a number of fronts. With regard to preparing teachers who must enter the teaching space, they need to enter already in possession of certain skills and competencies. So our focus must be on what do we do to refocus the teachers who are already in the system, but not those who are going to enter from the initial teacher perspective, that they must already be able to operate technology, they must be able to integrate ICTs into their classrooms, they must be able to do certain things. So we do work with sector-specific departments to respond to the issues that we are grappling with within the discussions that we are having now. The issue that you raised of the teacher being the source of knowledge, that we are in the business of transmitting language knowledge, and that the teacher plays a critical role in their capacities, becomes very critical. We fully agree with you that the role of the teacher is central to everything that we are talking about. However, there are certain realities that we also acknowledge, that the role of the teacher in the 21st century will change. And that though machines are not going to replace the teacher, there are certain functions that are going to be performed by machines that have been automated. Like, for instance, as we indicated that the DG spoke about the issue of e-marking, that it is a machine that will conduct the marking itself. Yeah, yes. No. They will be used by people, and there are people we need to produce, learners who are going to design these machines. So the type of skills that are required are going to produce people who, when you talk about a self-driving car, for instance, we need a new type of an engineer who will be able to design, maintain, and we don't have them at the moment. So the engineering space, and engineers are acknowledging that the type of engineers that you are going to require in the future may be skilled differently from the type of engineers that you are having right now. So teachers, there are certain functions that machines cannot take. Machines cannot empathize. A machine cannot deal with social issues. It cannot identify a learner who requires special attention in terms of their social aspects. A machine is heartless. A machine only operates according to how it has been programmed. But a human being, the human element within the teaching space will always be required. So a teacher will always be there. And teachers as managers are the ones who are going to decide what type of technologies will enter inside of their classrooms. So solutions where machines were imposed inside of a classroom did not work, because a teacher must actually say, I need a laptop, I need a projector, I need what. So a teacher is the one who decides what type of technology must actually get inside of the classroom. But like Honorable Ollis indicated, unless they are aware of these technologies, they will not be able to make those decisions as to what type of technology must actually get inside of the classroom. Maybe the last one that let me speak to the issue raised by Honorable Boshoff, just as an issue of clarity. Your observation on the table on page 60 was correct to say you've seen some very concerning numbers there, 3%, 6%, 3% connectivity in rural areas. Honorable Boshoff, the numbers that you see there are a baseline, as in 2014-2015. So that is a picture then, and the picture has actually, so if you look at it, so we're informing members about the baseline, where we come from, how things were in 2014-2015. And you'll see there is also a column that we also provided there with schools that had not been classified as either rural or urban at the time. So there are schools that would have got into that rural or actually moved into. So we were being very honest to say, according to the stats that we have from the Department of Telecommunication Postal Services, they had not categorized these schools as either urban or rural. So, but the figure that you see there, the 3% and 6%, you are correct, but that was a baseline. We'd like you to understand it as a baseline.
Thank you. The presentation is made now, we need the current situation. Where are we right now? I fully understand what Mr. Kalana is saying, but we always say the presentation is made now, the 18th. Today,
so where are we getting? When are we getting an updated version?
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I think colleagues have done an excellent job. I was just getting afraid, you know, Mr. Tlhabane, when it comes to ICT, very passionate. I knew him as a math and science person, but he's wired differently over the last few days. He's wired around ICT. He's also a lay priest, you know. You know, the passion builds up. If you don't restrain him, he'll move mountains and walk on water. maybe whilst talking about that, if I'm not going to offend anybody, using this biblical injunction, the presentation that we made today might signal a land of milk and honey. But before we reach the land of milk and honey, we have to go through the desert. And some of the attributes of the desert were articulated by Honorable Machesi to say, and Honorable Khosa to say, the resources. Do you have the resources? And even Honorable Boshoff to say, do you have teachers with the requisite skills? You're going to compete with other guys in the labor market. We are woefully aware of that. And maybe if I could spend just a few minutes to run through some of these things. You'd recall that in the last meeting of the portfolio committee that I attended, Honorable Ollis, I even shared with you an article written by Dr. Nick Spall, which was published on the 16th of April. And he acknowledges that he got that information from Dr. Martin Gustafsson, who's an internal researcher in the department based in the University of Stellenbosch, wherein he says that the funding in basic education has essentially declined by 10% in the past 7 years. Yeah. Past 7 to 10 years, from 2010, and he projects even up to 2019, that the funding has really declined by close to even 10% if you take a longitudinal view of about 10 years. And you've seen how budget cuts have impacted on our allocations. Honorable Machesi is right. MST is one of those grants that have suffered a budget cut, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it has. So, but coming from a poverty-stricken background, we were always taught that even in the midst of poverty, one of the things that can get you out of poverty is the ability to think creatively. And use the resources that you have, but maybe whilst being creative, other people who have money will chase you because of your creativity and invest in the ideas that you are putting forward. And already, I mean, in the short space of time that we've been dealing with these things, Dr. Semelani covered that, business has come on board. I mean, you have Nissan, you've got Toyota, you have BMW, and now we're even saying, let's try and target these countries, I mean, these business entities in terms of countries where they come from. Those that come from Germany, let's develop a strategy for them. Those that come from France, let's develop a strategy for them. And those that come from Italy, let's also develop a strategy, because they have their own interests and so on in investing in the country. And we put together this small team. Within this short period, this is the work that they've been able to do. And our view is that in building an institutional capacity to do this work, I'm sure there's a lot of goodwill in South Africa and people coming from outside to invest in South Africa. I think we can achieve many, many things if we do that. Maybe just to add a little bit, Dr. Simelane has explained, and I hope Honorable Ollis now understands, or maybe even if he doesn't accept, appreciates the distinction that we make as South Africa between technical vocational and technical occupational, agreeing fully with him that from face value the two are the same. Until you reach that point where Dr. Simelane says so much is allocated for a theoretical component, so much is allocated for an occupational, a practical component. They are the same. They are essentially the same. And I'm sure we appreciate that. And by the way, I'm coming there. Even Germany that you refer to, honorable members here will remember that I spent 3 solid years visiting Germany, year after year, when we were conceptualizing this thing of the 3-3 model. Germany used to have a 3-type schooling system, but having a 2-stream model. And that was relevant for their
peculiar context and so on. They've now even moved from three schooling types, they've moved to two schooling types, but they still keep to the two-stream model. Now, what makes Germany and Finland and other Scandinavian countries different from us is that these things that we are doing in those countries are highly regulated in legislation. Industry, it's not left to its own volition to absorb young people who are qualified. The law is there. If you operate in those countries, you've got to give them workplace experience, you've got to absorb them. And there's an agency, they've established an agency that tracks these learners from school up to industry, and even reporting on how which industries have absorbed how many people and so on. So it's one of those things that we probably need to look at. I know that Honorable Olives wants me to talk about the TLI. TLI, Teacher Laptop Initiative, which was announced by the former president, Jacob Zuma. It never took off the ground, and I'm sure honorable members know because we briefed them before. Part of the reason, and I hope you'll keep this within this wall, and I know you'll do that. The modality was to get teachers to purchase this and then compensate them for the purchase that they have made and then subsidize them on the purchase that they would have made. The brief survey that was made was that generally our public servants are not credit worthy. And it collapsed the project. It collapsed the project. It could not fly. And that's why the Western Cape, and by the way, Mr. Kavani, they've moved to intermediate phase. He said to me they are now left with senior phase. Eastern Cape left with a senior phase and FET. So the best thing is for departments or government to buy. In my view, these are utility instruments. It's like a laborer who needs a hake and a spade. And ideally, the state should be able to procure this. And if we do it on economies of scale, we should be able to purchase this better. But now, we have what we call a transversal tender called RT15, which is what the Eastern Cape is using. Eastern Cape is using RT15, which is offered through Vodacom. You can get the laptops much cheaper than you get them from the labor market from this central procurement of RT50.
Could you just clarify, DG? Sorry, Chair. I just want to get... I don't know the past because I wasn't here. All I'm worried about is the situation now.
Yeah.
If a school teacher now in the Eastern Cape or in Gauteng or anywhere or in the Western Cape needs a laptop, what is their position now? Through this transversal tender, does the school purchase one for them or the department, or must they buy it? Or I'm just trying to understand how many teachers are able to access computers for their own learning and training and work and preparing lessons and all that. That's what I'm trying to establish. I'm not worried about trashing the past. I mean, if it fails now, I'll talk about now, but I'm just worried about now.
No, thank you very much. As I said, I think the past was also important to clarify because there was a position of government. Now, why that position couldn't fly, I've given that explanation. Now, what exists now is that through RT15, departments, governments, and individuals can procure laptops or computers at a much more cost-effective rate through this transversal tender. There is no position in government at the moment for government to buy computers for teachers. It is a position of the Eastern Cape that as part of improving the performance of their education in the Eastern Cape, they are buying laptops for teachers, for school management teams, for principals, and for the office-based staff that support schools through RT15. So there is no government-wide position. But the tender benefits everyone who's in government and could even benefit individuals if you buy through. It's called RT15. Instead of people, you can actually buy it as an individual, use it for your work, and use it for your own personal purposes, for as long as you can produce a personal number.
Same with other provinces, which I have to find a way to get to the computer, but where they send cases to it.
Correct. But what we want to encourage, because as I said, these are utility instruments. It's like a gardener who needs a rake, who needs a spade to do his or her work. It's no more luxuries. These are basic utilities for people to be able to do their work. I think Honorable Bhuti's relationship with sector departments, colleagues have responded to it. My own view is that we need to do more. In fact, you need to keep on reminding us. We've done something, but it is not enough. We need to work closely with the Department of SMMEs, to make sure that the skills that we are preparing will lend themselves to contributing to the economy of the country. And Honorable Ollis, as you leave, I think Dr. Simelane said we need to go back and check, but I think I agree with you. Especially these provinces that are chasing number one, number two, number three, number four, they are doing it through deviant behavior. For instance, Western Cape is the lowest when it comes to learners who do mathematics. The lowest, 33%. I'm sure Deputy Minister will tell you tomorrow that KZN, I think it's around 54% of learners who do mathematics as opposed to those who do math lit. So Honorable Ollis is right. These provinces are pursuing deviant, deviant means to make sure that they remain at the top of the league. The capacity of the state, Honorable Bhuti's predicated on the quality of teachers, I fully agree, 100%. But again, without dwelling too much into the past, remember that 80% and maybe slightly more, even to 90% of the teachers that we have in the system, were trained by the apartheid system to provide poor education. It was deliberate. It's not an accident. It was deliberate that the initial teacher development programs were designed in such a way that teachers teach what doesn't take us very far as a country. And therefore, the continuing teacher development programs are trying, but your foundation is more solid than anything, and it's very difficult. And therefore, the good thing is that the research shows that the new teachers who are entering the teaching profession bring better subject content knowledge. And I'm speaking in general terms, especially those teachers who are also trained by teacher training colleges, which provided poor programs of teacher development, especially when it comes to subject content knowledge. But when it comes to teaching method, the teacher training colleges were doing much better than even what universities are doing now, including your teaching practice, etc. So I agree with you. It's something that will be seized with throughout. It's going to take some time, but we really need to make sure that we deal with it. Honorable Khosa, we are identifying challenges, and I think going forward we need to put a comprehensive plan as to what are we going to do with each of the identified challenges so that we succeed. The same applies to issues of resources, teacher quality, and even what relates to the rollout plan. I must also remind you, Chair, that a technical high school is very expensive compared to an ordinary public school to run. Extremely expensive. But ideally, we need to have 60% of our schools at least, let me say 60% of our schools shared between technical, vocational, and technical occupational, if we are to get our country right. So we need to make that investment. And again, with the diminishing resources that we have, but those bold decisions we need to take. Aviation school, part of my learning when I was in Seattle was that, number one, the world is looking up to Africa to provide the skills for the future, because the youngest people in the world, if you look at the seven continents, are found in the continent of Africa, in the main. So the world is looking up to Africa to provide those skills. And I think already, I mean, people are being recruited. South Africa, we know how many people leave this country to go somewhere. But aviation, in the immediate future, is going to be the common mode of transport. You know, now we're talking Mengu, we're talking Kulula, cost-effective and so on. Yeah, I'm not sure about fly fare. I think yes, that's going to be the means of transport. And by the way, it's not only around pilots and air hostess, it's around technicians who build and maintain aeroplanes. You need them from all over the world, even from the Northern Cape. You need them. Who knows? The future helicopter might be built in the Northern Cape. We don't know, but we have to make sure that we provide for these needs. And that's why I'm saying when we went to Seattle, our plan was that at least every province must have one aviation school. And in that aviation school, math and science are compulsory and geography. And then you do other subjects, you know, languages and so on, and then you work closely with the aviation industry for workplace experience, for exposure, for learners, you know, to be fully equipped with the experience of working in the aviation. So I just want to emphasize the fact, it's like talking about maritime schools. I said to Gauteng and all other inland provinces, if you don't have the ocean, you'll have to create it. You have to look for a pond and call it an ocean, but offer maritime studies, because we've got the largest strip, one of the largest strips, coastal strips in the world. And yet, we are not capitalizing it for creating jobs, for, you know, growing the economy and so on. I mean, if you look at other countries that have shorter strips, coastal strips than what we have, I mean, their ocean economy, it's far much bigger, 10 times or 100 times bigger than our economy. And that's what we are looking at. Honorable Boshoff, consultation has happened. We've met with departments, we've met. Unions are very excited about the three streams. Extremely, extremely excited. But maybe latching on the issue of the skills that are required. My recollection tells me that the Northwest University and the Porch campus was the only HEI which was focusing on training teachers on vocational education. And on the 22nd of, the 20th, yeah, I've lost my recollection. I think the 20th of March, no, 20th of February, we had a meeting with universities at DBE, Mr. Cameron. Yeah. 26 universities, we invited them there, and we said, we are implementing the three stream, we need teachers, you need to train them, and train them to be able to offer this. And teachers that come from universities should be able to offer these subjects that we are presenting. We presented all of these things to them, and we agreed that it should not be a once-off meeting. We must meet every year, at least twice a year, to monitor whether they are moving in that direction and whether we are also doing things that they expect from us. So there's been broad consultation with departments, broad consultation with universities, broad consultation with even social partners. Availability of LTSM, I agree with you, although Mr. Kawane said this was done in 2015, it's an issue that we need to keep our eyes on, because it is a problem. I must agree with you. Provincial visits have also indicated that we still have LTSM shortages. It's there, almost in all provinces. And what provinces are looking at is to plug the hole in grade 12, but forget about the lower grades, because they know that our attention will be in grade 12. But the gaps created in lower grades will show in, even in grade 12. Participation versus success rate, all that we are saying, I give an example of Western Cape. Western Cape has got the lowest participation rate in math, 33, but they've got the highest success rate of learners who pass mathematics. You know why? Because they only allow their so-called good schools to offer math. Those that they are not sure that they'll give them passes, they give them math lit. So I hope you get my point. So participation rate is the number of learners who enroll. Success rate is those who pass. KZN has got the largest number of learners who do math, but they've got fewer than Western Cape of those who pass, if we talk percentages. But actual numbers, there'll obviously be more. Yeah. Workshops. The MST is about recapitalizing workshops, making sure that those workshops, and by the way, as part of the fourth industrial revolution, we'll also be talking about virtual workshops. The workshop that is on the computer. You do your experiment on the computer or on your phone. You don't have to smell the chemicals, if it's a laboratory, and so on. You can do it on the phone, you can do it on the computer. Dr. Simulani answers the issue of the GEC, the certificate that will be issued at the end of grade 9 for all learners. The issue of making sure that computers do not compete with us is absolutely spot on. And Mr. Tawane responded to that. A computer cannot engage in critical thinking. It can't. A computer can only give you what you have, the input. And beyond that, it can't. Yeah, you can Google, but it requires a human being. Still, unless a human being directs it in a particular form, it won't be able. So critical thinking, problem solving, creativity and innovation, collaboration, communication and social skills, you still require them. By the way, the easiest thing to do is to train people for skills that are required now. The most difficult thing to do is to train people for skills that don't exist, because you have to stretch your imagination based on your current experience. And that's what universities are now called to do. Even us planners, we are called to plan for things that do not exist. We need to stretch our imagination. Even our policies to make sure that they are user-friendly for things that do not exist. And by the way, in future will be even, there are virtual schools already. In other countries, you don't need to be behind four walls. A learner can attend a class from a cell phone. Singapore issued an ICT strategy a few months ago, and saying that people can learn from anywhere, under a tree, in a bus, anywhere, it can be a class. And so we need to prepare for those things as part of the education. Chair, I'm almost done. Partners, I think that Honorable Machesi was saying you need to strengthen your partnership. It's there, but strengthen it even more with the CETAs, all CETAs, not only MERCETA. So we the ETDP CETA is part of the family, Honorable Buetes. We work on them. Our ECD training is done by them. So they are part of everything that we do. Yeah. Honorable Basson, always Gauteng. It's unfortunate. We are really trying, but this time around we must commend us. At least Eastern Cape is there, it's not Western Cape. And even Free State is there. But this time around we said to provinces, which provinces are ready to pilot? And these three jumped in. And we are hoping that the rest should also be on board by 2019. But taking into account, you know, the budgetary constraints and challenges that provinces are faced with as well. So I'm responding to when are we going to reaching out to all as well. The 2017 training was about preparing for grade 12 for technical vocational stream. It was about orientation, but we are saying universities must train for proper qualification. We just do orientation, and we're training people who are qualified already. We just do orientation, it's not training for qualifications. Yes, schools, that's why it's not all technical high schools, by the way, who are offering areas of specialization. It's only those that the audit indicated that they were ready to offer these new areas of specialization. The intention is to roll out to all in future. So, Chair, it's not all technical high schools that would even get learners sitting for these areas of specialization this year. If you are ready, we get you in. If you are not ready, we said, no, let's get you ready first. Workshop, qualified teachers, textbooks, and whether you have learners, and then we can take you. Learners will be properly accredited at NQF level 4, so there's no problem. How long does it take for remarking? I'll have to go back on this one because exams is not here, and I know that they said to me they've been experiencing challenges of now late. That's why I'm seeing the CEO of CETA tomorrow. Chair, the issue of the grade 9 certificate has been responded to. I'm sure you got it. When are the TVET colleges moving into NQF level 5? There is no definite date as yet, and we'll signal that to you as soon as it happens. I hope that the new minister who comes from both departments will push us to move faster, all of us, who was also chair of the subcommittee of the ruling party. Is the system ready? We've indicated our readiness in terms of each of the streams. Communication and advocacy on the revocation of the designated list, I fully agree with you that we all need to go out, put this information out so that parents understand and encourage children now to do all the subjects of their choice, a subject that can contribute to the economy of the country, because there is no need to be limited only to those that universities will recognize. Let me reiterate that what I said earlier on. The land of milk and honey is at hand, but we will have to go through the desert. It's not going to be easy. There might be difficulties. Some might perish in the desert, but definitely there will be those who will meet the benefits of the land of milk and honey. Thank you, Chair.
Amen. Now, DJ, maybe I don't usually do this, but let me commend you with your team today. The passion that you have shown here today, I think it's one of a kind that you don't usually. I'm not saying you're not ever passionate about, and the presenters when they come here, your team. They are not sure of what they do, but really today the level of passion that we have seen, it gives us great hope as to say, even if we do get those who will perish on the way, but still, the better chunk of it will, are going to reach Kenan.
Yeah,
and, exactly. So thank you ever so much, our colleagues. It's an ongoing topic anyway. We'll always get the progress report, we'll always engage on such things, even with other topics, the issues that we have just engaged on, they'll always be part of our discussions moving forward. But thank you very much, really. The discussion has raised a lot of hope. The inclusivity that we have seen, that the department wants to make sure that we take each and every learner, give them a chance in life. It's really encouraging. Thank you ever so much. I know honorable members are eager and we're pressed this time. We want to go and prepare our speeches for tomorrow. And as we have seen, the DA has all gone out because I think they're going to look at that as a group. So we can adjourn the meeting. Then we'll meet tomorrow at 2, honorable members and also colleagues from the department at the NA for our debate, our budget vote debate tomorrow. Thank you ever so much.